Welcome to Simple Living Works, Episode 12. I'm Jerry Iverson. I'm pleased to present an interview with the editor of Living More with Less, 30th Anniversary Edition, plus a bit about simplifying winter festivals and the Any Year Alternative Simple Living Calendar. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, and effective lifestyle. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the five life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Lockacre. I discuss those standards in Episode 2. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. To learn more about Simple Living Works, listen to Episodes 1 and 2. I'm glad you're with me today. The classic Living More with Less has guided alternatives for decades. Valerie Weaver Zurcher edited the 30th Anniversary Edition. She's my guest for this episode. Living More with Less has been central to my ministry for over 30 years, and my wife Rita and I discovered it in the early 80s when the first edition came out. We read the book, we had a life change, and we serialized it at that point for public radio with the permission of Herald Press. And so it's my delight that it's now out in its 30th anniversary edition and that Valerie can talk to us about the differences between the first edition and the 30th edition and why, for example, Herald Press decided to put out a 30th edition. So let's start there, Valerie.
Sure. Well, I'm actually now an editor with Herald Press, although at the time that I was working on this 30th anniversary edition, I was working as a freelancer, as an editor and writer. And Herald Press approached me as the 30th anniversary was approaching, so in 2009, because they wanted to bring out this anniversary edition that would kind of bring the witness of the earlier edition to contemporary readers. They felt like the time was right for such an edition to appear, in part because I think, you know, conversations about living simply were kind of entering the cultural mainstream, I think, in 2008, 2009, as the economic recession forced a lot of people to think about simple living in a way that maybe they hadn't been before. So they felt like this topic of living simply and living more with less was perhaps able to reach kind of a larger breadth of readership than it would have been just even 5 or 10 years previous. So they approached me about putting together a book that would kind of celebrate the best and include most of the text of the first edition, but make it available to contemporary readers. You know, the first edition appeared in 1980, so there were certain things that dated the book just in terms of, you know, kind of daily life and the way that it had changed. So they really wanted to make it relevant to younger readers and to folks living in the 21st century.
Well, the first edition, of course, was by Doris Jansen Lockacre. And for those of you who know her story, she actually died before the book appeared in print. It was finished by her husband. And that book does include ideas from other people, but it was primarily by Doris, where this new edition, I understand, has a lot of contributors.
Right. You know, the story of Doris Jansen Lockacre and the More with Less cookbook, and then this companion volume, which was published a few years later, is just a really moving one, I think. She and her husband, Paul, had actually spent several years in Vietnam and Indonesia in the 70s, and returned, you know, concerned that they wanted to remain mindful of and faithful to the witness that they had seen modeled to them by Christians in Southeast Asia. So she produced the More with Less cookbook, which, you know, included a lot of contributions from people all around the world. And that cookbook did just incredibly well. You know, it was published by Herald Press, which is this small denominational publisher. You know, we're not used to huge sales volume, but that cookbook sold 200,000 copies in just the first 2 years. So then Living More with Less became this way for Doris and the contributors that she invited to contribute to it to kind of expand the witness of the cookbook, to reflect on how do we live faithfully, you know, not just in the kitchen, but when we are thinking about how to purchase furniture, you know, how we think about recreational choices, how we think about travel. So yes, she included the voices of lots of different people in the original edition, and then we certainly wanted to remain true to that as well in the 30th anniversary edition. So there's lots of Doris's writing and some of the voices of contributors from the first edition, but then we also invited contributions by lots of people, current writers, especially Anabaptist writers, and contributors about stories and suggestions for ways that they're trying to live more simply and more faithfully.
For those folks who aren't aware or aren't familiar with Herald Press, Herald Press is the denominational publishing house for the Mennonite denomination. And I want to clarify something because I've discovered this about Mennonites. I'm a Lutheran myself, that Mennonites have a lot of variety in their denomination. We think of Mennonites as being, you know, very modest and even conservative people, but there are also progressive Mennonites, and there are middle-of-the-road Mennonites, and there are conservative Mennonites, and that is not only in theology, but also in lifestyle.
That's right. And I think one of the things that has really affected the Mennonite kind of witness over the past, I don't know, 50 or 100 years is the work that Mennonites have done in other parts of the world. So Mennonite Central Committee, which is actually a kind of coalition of not just Mennonites, but several other Anabaptist groups as well, is a relief and service and kind of peacemaking agency. And the witness of Mennonite Central Committee and other Mennonite mission and service efforts, you know, it's kind of the typical story, I think, of mission. Mennonites might have envisioned ourselves in the 20th century taking the gospel of Christ to other parts of the world from North America, and certainly have discovered that what we have brought back to the West with us in terms of learnings from Christian brothers and sisters in other parts of the world has just been astounding. So the Mennonite church is now mostly a phenomenon of the two-thirds world. There are more Mennonites living outside the United States and Canada than inside. And so I think that kind of global perspective really influences the theology and the lives, hopefully, of those of us Mennonites who do live in the Western and Northern world. And I think a book like Living More with Less, the More with Less cookbook, and there's two other cookbooks in the series that the More with Less cookbook started, including one that's a global foods cookbook, Extending the Table. These books have all been, I think, I would say, radically influenced by Christians from the South and the ways that Mennonites have been challenged by the witness of their brothers and sisters around the world.
And that's really good, because Mennonites are subject to the same temptations as anyone else living in the United States.
Absolutely. And I was so aware of that as I was working on this 30th anniversary edition. You know, here I am. I'm a mother of three boys. I live in suburban Pennsylvania. I mean, the challenges of remaining faithful to my understanding of how Christ calls us to live in the suburbs is just immense. And certainly everybody faces it. But I think there's a kind of hothouse feeling in suburban America we encounter at every turn, especially with children. And so I found myself, as I was editing this volume, just continually kind of challenged and affirmed, but really prodded along in my own sense of the choices I need to make. And it's a journey for all of us, and I was heartened and challenged along the way as I worked on this book.
Now, talking about the influence of people in the other parts of the world, of course, relates very closely to one of the five life standards, that is, learn from the world community. Now, the Living More with Lais is based on 5 life standards, and I think we'll talk about each one of those very briefly, and they all relate to the other areas of life that you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, things like transportation and housing and food choices. Each one of those relates to the 5 life standards. They're beautifully interconnected. I'm not worried about taking these 5 life standards in order, so let's talk about that very one, learn from the world community. And I like to summarize that when I give a talk, and I've given many talks on Living More with Lais and the 5 life standards, I like to say, maybe we don't know everything there is to know about everything that we can learn from our brothers and sisters in the other parts of the world. What's your reaction?
Yeah, I think this standard was central for Doris, having spent time in Vietnam and Indonesia, having come back to the United States and thinking through how can Christians in Canada and the United States kind of lessen our impact or negative impact on the natural world. How can we live more simply? She very quickly realized, well, of course, we have a model for this. We need to learn from those people who might not have chosen simple living voluntarily, but have perhaps been forced into it by poverty and in many parts of the world. So, in the 30th anniversary edition, we had 2 writers reflect on each life standard. So we included Doris's original writings on that particular standard and then invited 2 writers to reflect on the standard from a kind of contemporary perspective. So the 2 writers that we invited to reflect on this one, two from Japan, Mitsuko and Yorifumi Yaguchi, who are 2 Japanese Mennonites, reflecting on the standard from their perspective, and then Doris Dube, who is a woman from Zimbabwe, who wrote about it from her perspective, especially during incredible economically difficult time in her country. And then, of course, the book is infused with this idea, that is, either what Canadians and North Americans learned when they were living abroad in terms of how to live in smaller spaces, or how to prepare food from scratch, or how simply to expect great joy to be found with not a lot of stuff. So the standard, learn from the world community, I would say, is just, it just kind of infuses the whole book.
Let's take standard number 1 then, that is do justice. And as I've said, it's not just think about justice, it's actually do justice. And I like to make a comparison between charity and justice, because we think of ourselves as being very generous people, charitable people, but there's a big difference between charity and justice. For me, working for justice is working to change a system, whether that be corporate or government or even a church system, that makes charity necessary. Let me say that again. Justice is working to change systems that make charity necessary. What is your reflection on do justice?
Yes. I think Doris, probably this is the first life standard that she deals with. And I think that was likely intentional. That is, this book is in some ways this collection of small daily choices that we make. It's about how we cook and how we travel and what we buy or don't buy. It's about, things we do with children, and it's about gardening and small groups and food choices. So it's these kind of little small choices that we make every day. And I think Doris really wanted to make the point that that's where we need to start. We need to, in some ways, start with getting our own houses in order, is the way she puts it. But that those little acts of change have to lead us to something more. And I think that's where she gets to the kind of justice aspect that you're talking about. That by conserving resources at home, by trying to figure out how to live simply in our kind of daily lives, has to lead us to some larger kind of economic and political issues. And, I think she was criticized because perhaps she didn't give a lot of answers in that regard. And certainly in the 21st century, issues of advocacy and activism likely look different than they did in the 70s and 80s. But, you know, she said very clearly that simple living isn't enough, that it has to kind of draw us into action and activism on behalf of the poor of the world, and that it will do so, you know, if it grows out of faith, if these changes grow out of our deeply held convictions, that we will be led to do at least something on that larger level.
Well, we're hopeful that we can be role models in our own lives to other people. But it also, as you say, can lead to larger changes as well. And so that's life standard number one, do justice. See, sometimes we can't change big systems. We can't control corporations. We can't control governments, but we can control our own lives. So we do have a way of making some changes in the world. Another one is nurture people. And I like to add to that, not things, because we are world-class nurturers of stuff. And her focus, as I see it, is to focus on relationships, relationship with other people, relationships with nature, and relationship with God, and where so much of our time now is focused on our relationship with stuff.
That's so true, and I would say, as a parent, this is one of the life standards that I guess struggle with and prioritize, and yet struggle with every day. The commodity that I feel most lacking in my life is time, and finding and prioritizing time for people is really hard in 21st century, you know, middle class America. So, you know, it's one thing for me, and it's fairly easy, I think, for parents, hopefully, who are committed to simple living, and in some ways to prioritize our families. You know, I can, my children are right here with me, and I don't find it hard in some ways to make room in my schedule for my children. But friendships and relationships with folks at church and kind of prioritizing community, there are so many things in our daily lives that are kind of set up against that. And so I find, as I reread Doris Jansen Longacre's writings on this, just it to be a really good challenge, that finding time to spend with and developing those friendships and relationships and nurturing others and letting myself be nurtured. It's a struggle, but it's just something that's incredibly necessary, especially when one's committed to simple living, to find other people who share these kinds of values so that you don't feel as alone. Those are all part of this standard as well.
The fourth standard is cherish the natural order. And that's sort of an old way of saying what we would say now is care for creation. It's what I see as the environmental life standard.
Right. And I have really liked that Doris chose the word cherish when she was speaking about creation care. I mean, this life standard, perhaps more than any other, I think has gained an incredible poignancy and urgency beyond what even Doris knew in 1980. I mean, we know more now. We know so much more now about climate change, about the ways that our habits are affecting our globe. So I think Doris was really a kind of future caster in this life standard. Certainly, those conversations were beginning in the 70s and perhaps even earlier. But it's taken on certainly an urgency beyond what I think people even knew at that point. But I like the fact that she chose the word cherish, because I think we tend to prioritize and care for what we love, and so this implies a kind of love of the natural world that really we need to cultivate. It's easy, I think, today to to not give priority to the natural world in our affections. So I'm heartened when, you know, my family goes out on a hike and my middle son notices birds. He's become actually a really committed bird watcher. And I pray that for all of us that we find elements of the natural world that we love enough that we are kind of propelled to action on their behalf.
The last of the five is non-conform freely. This is one of my favorites because this gives me permission to not conform to the desires of advertising or even not even to peer pressure, but rather to be open to the call of God and to, if need be, dress differently or act differently than what is the current fad.
And I tell you, this is the one I think I struggle with most with my children. You know, it's one thing for me or my husband to choose some things that kind of go against the grain, and we certainly don't do that as much as we could. But, you know, it's really hard when children are faced with the pressures of, you know, brand name clothing, the latest gadget. All the kinds of things that go along with keeping up with the Joneses these days. It's a struggle, I think, as a parent to know how much to ask a child to not conform. That sense of difference is, I think, easier for an adult to choose than for a child. So I think this is the standard that I find myself struggling with the most in terms of how much to ask of my children in that regard. That doesn't negate the value of it, and I find that children who sense that they're maybe a little different from their peers, who are a little odd because they don't have all the latest things, I think those children actually grow up to be adults who are confidently countercultural, and I just pray that my own children can find their way there and that I can support them in that. But non-conforming freely, I mean, what a lovely way to put it. Non-conforming with joy, not with anxiety or not with fear, but non-conforming freely and with joy. It's a great, great standard.
I'm really grateful to you, Valerie, also that you have prepared an online study action guide so that people who want to study Living More with Less personally, individually, or in a family, or in a congregation, or in a group, have an online study guide that they can access just about any time that they can get online.
That's right. At heraldpress.com, we have multiple study guides for different resources, and including one for Living More with Less. And I tested out some of those ideas in my own congregation. We had a study, Sunday school study that focused on Living More with Less, even as I was working on finalizing this 30th anniversary edition. So was able to test some of those ideas in that group, and hopefully people will find it to be a helpful resource.
I know there's a Living More with Less Facebook group that I'm a member of, and gladly. Any other ideas that you see percolating to support this book?
I've been amazed at the interest of it. For example, the Living More with Less Facebook group has continued to grow. And of course, we had some fun times joking about whether Doris Jansen Longacre would have approved of a Living More with Less Facebook group, or whether the kind of obsessive nature of social media would have been something that she would not have supported. Our hope for this book is that it is one of those that really, in some ways, the marketing happens word of mouth. That somebody reads it and they find it transformative, and they pass it to a friend, or they, tell somebody else about it. One of the women that I spoke to when we were in initial stages of kind of spreading the word about the book said, she came up to me after an event and was talking about the first edition. She said, "I read this book every 2 years." She said, "to kind of recalibrate my life, to remind me of what I believe is important." And so I think we hope that the book will be that for people, one that they can go back to every year or two to kind of remind themselves of these life standards and the ways that we can live joyfully with less.
Well, Valerie, I really appreciate your time and your insight Anything else you'd like to share with our podcast listeners before we say goodbye today?
About
the content, or about the process, anything at all?
I just perhaps that this was an incredible honor for me to be involved in this project. And Doris Jansen Longacre envisions the first edition, and I certainly envision this 30th anniversary edition, as kind of a, she used the word testimony meeting, a way to collect the testimonies of a variety of people as they speak about the joy that they've found in living and living with and choosing less. And so the 30th anniversary edition, I think, is just that. It's this multi-vocal kind of collection of stories that kind of challenge you on your way and provide affirmation for people who are making sometimes difficult choices. So it was an incredible honor to be part of the project, and thank you for featuring it here. And thank you for all that you've done on this book. You know, I researched a little bit about some of your work, and I just am grateful to you for all that, you've done for the book in the past and continue to do. That's just really heartening for those of us who are at Herald Press to know that folks like you are really, you know, taking resources like this and making them available in to a wider audience. So thank you.
You're more than welcome.
I think we do perceive that there is this kind of much broader level interest both in Anabaptism and some of these kind of central kind of values that Anabaptism has espoused and in the wider culture and among mainline Protestants, among evangelical Christians and beyond. And so we feel like we're in this moment of opportunity and kind of how can we help to, you know, provide the resources that are helpful for people as they either discover Anabaptism or feel themselves more and more aligned with some of these values, and yet also struggling with some of the economic realities. So, you know, it's an interesting, I don't know, it's kind of a, it's one of those moments of creative crisis, maybe, in some way. So, you know, as you encounter readers, feel free to let us know what you think people are looking for in this regard. I think we'd love to continue to think about what resources like Living More with Less can we produce. You know, the cookbooks, More with Less, Extending the Table, and then there's a third in the series, Simply in Season, those have continued to perform very well for Herald Press. And you know, we really do see those as more than just cookbooks. There's a lot of kind of theology and lifestyle choice, you know, written into those cookbooks as well. So I think those, you know, that's where we're probably reaching the widest readership with this kind of message. Simply in Season, the adult cookbook has just done really well. The children's cookbook maybe a little less so, but that seems to really, together they seem to be really speaking to that kind of resurgence of interest in, you know, buy local. I will tell you, we are revising Extending the Table, that's second in the World Community Cookbook series. We're adding some new recipes, including, for example, some from Afghanistan. There were no Afghan recipes in the 1990 version, and of course with kind of geopolitical realities and U.S. involvement in Afghanistan since then, we decided we really wanted to have some from there.
You've been listening to my conversation with Valerie Weaver-Zurcher, editor of the 30th anniversary edition of Living More with Less. We offer extensive free support materials for Living More with Less. See the link in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. We've received a wonderful positive response to Simple Living Works podcast. By way of Living More with Less Facebook page, Carolyn Geisinger said simply, "Thank you for making the podcasts available." Amy wrote, "Hi, Gerald. I listened to episode 3 so far. It was good, and your voice came through. I'll look forward to when you can interview people and be a bit more spontaneous with your comments so we can get a feel for you, not just your message. Thanks so much, and I'll send you more comments when I listen to the others." Thanks for your suggestion, Amy. I present my first extended interview in this episode. Mary Hance wrote, "Dear Jerry, you may remember me. I write a column called Ms. Cheap in the Tennessean in Nashville. I'm working on a column for the next week about things to do to make Christmas cheaper and happier. I know this is overly simplistic, but if you had to say three things you would recommend doing this season to make Christmas cheaper and more meaningful, what would they be? I replied, "Good to hear from you, Mary. I'm now doing all my work through social media. Here are a couple of my quick lists from which you may choose. 10 tips for a simpler, more meaningful Christmas, and 10 fun, free family things to do at Christmas." By the way, I'll put the links to those in the show notes as well. We compile comments, testimonials, responses, and feedback on our website. See the link in the show notes if you'd like to peruse some of those. In addition to this podcast and its show notes, we blog three times a week on a variety of simple living subjects. Click on the blog at the top of the show notes of any episode. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org or comment on our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. All those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. Well, start planning for next Christmas. Write a piece for Whose Birthday Is It Anyway? 2014. Maybe a good family experience or a bad experience turned good, for example. Do it now while your memories are warm and your motivation is high. Submission guidelines are given in the show notes. I'd like to introduce you to the free Simple Living Alternatives Calendar for any year, subtitled Caring for All God's Creation Through Simpler Living. And the purpose of this calendar? We can change our wasteful habits into caring for God's creation. We can start by living the environmental tithe, by reducing our consumption by at least 10%. This calendar attempts to influence various aspects of our lives. Each month has a theme and related topics, ideas to contemplate, reflect, meditate, or pray, to self-evaluate and discover, to investigate and educate ourselves and others, and then to act, agitate, and advocate. For serendipity, a new topic may appear out of the blue from time to time. And how to use this calendar? Start any day. Start today. Time and seasons are cyclical. They're continuous. Time does not begin with January and end with December. Jump in anywhere. This calendar can be used any year. It includes no days of the week. Read each day's thoughts by yourself, with others, at home, at the office. Print some in church bulletin blurbs, as newsletter fillers, etc. You don't need further permission. Write down and share your ideas and resolutions. The URL is given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, click window number 3. Bookmark that URL so you can get back to it easily each day. For a few samples, go to the blog listed in the show notes. Want more copies of the calendar for others? You can format it and distribute it as you choose under the non-commercial Creative Commons license. We post new Simple Living Works blogs several times a week. We hope you'll read them and subscribe. Our blog is the companion to this, our two times a month podcast. The content is different, but the subject is the same. As one of the early and long-standing supporters of alternatives, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, known as the ELCA, has pledged to keep a copy of each resource produced by alternatives and to make copies available by request at a nominal charge. Feel free to contact them at the office near Chicago. The complete contact information is given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, click window number 3. 2013 was the 40th year of alternative service. We celebrated in modest ways, such as starting this podcast. If you'd like to read more about it, the link to the annual report is in the show notes. Also, in the process of getting copies of our resources to the ELCA archives for safekeeping, we found some historic photos, which I scanned, uploaded to the Simple Living Works website, and labeled it. They're in the brief history section of About Us. The link is in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. In episode 13, I'll talk about preparing for Lent and Easter. Time to wrap up episode 12 of Simple Living Works podcast. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes or your favorite podcast service. We want to get to know you as a subscriber to this podcast and to the blogs we produce new each week. Subscriptions are free and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Remember to like us on Facebook. Urge your friends to do the same. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Provide your email address to receive our monthly Simple Living Works e-newsletter. Thanks to John Pitney and Earth Mama for music on our show. Find details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org in window number 3. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage or in the show notes. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.